Let me just do a name check here.
Good luck with this one, Joe.
Right, we've got Mark O'Donovan there, yeah?
No relation.
We've got Gary O'Donovan there.
Yeah.
We've got Paul O'Donovan there.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah, I'm sure.
And have we Shane O'Driscoll?
We do, indeed.
And is Denise Walsh there?
No.
She'd more sense.
The booth is closed. She can't hear you. Anyway, back to where we were.
Go on. Hang on. Who's
Gary. Introduce yourself.
You're going to need to say your name before you talk. Gary, I think that's you.
Gary.
Right, go on.
Yeah, it's Gary.
So you were watching the race?
We watched the race afterwards on the internet. And what was incredible about Mark and Shane was that when they went off the start, they went off at an incredibly high pace. And what most crews do is they walk very, very fast and settle into a race pace rhythm. But Mark and Shane's race pace rhythm was the very same as our absolute flat-out sprint at the finish of our race.
Right.
We were doing 42 strokes a minute at the very end of the race, sprinting for the finish line. And Mark and Shane were doing 43 and 44 strokes a minute down the hallway, down the course. And that kind of thing is unheard of. Like, we don't know how they did it. That feat was exceptional in itself, whatever about getting the medal.
Yeah, sure. So, Mark, you're 28. Shane, you're 24.
Like, what's this got to do with anything?
Well, I'm just giving people context because they mightn't be familiar with your stories.
Oh, we're all very, very young. Yeah, people have been giving out to me that I'm too old. We're young at heart. Now even younger at heart. We're like children there, aren't they?
Yeah.
Keep me young.
I was going to ask you, Mark and Shane. So, have you been a partnership for a long time at this stage, or is this a relatively new thing?
We've been together 3 years now on the road, in the same category, and doing the lightweight pair, so this is our third season.
Right, okay.
And this is Paul now. I'm just going to add in there that Mark and Shane actually lived in the same bedroom above a pub for a couple of months before. Like, I mean, how long were you in the pub together that time?
Too long.
they were never out of each other's hair, like, so they're practically the same person there, you know?
It's a shame every Saturday night there would be music on in the pub, though, so we'd never really get to sleep too early. It'd be about 3 o'clock and we'd have to be up early Sunday morning for training. So
this is Paul again. It's a wonder how you didn't go down.
That's definitely
down.
Gary, by the way. There's no chance. You could get away with that once, Gary, not twice.
What are you lads doing in the car now? Where are you going?
We just had the dinner there. Yeah.
Where?
The West Cork Hotel, Barry Foster. I thought he was very good.
Right, okay. Have you got another reception to go to tonight, or is there more celebration?
Well, we're watching the TV there, and your one in RT was on.
Guest was on silent inside in the restaurant, like, and
apparently they're waiting for us somewhere. But
we looked at the TV and we go, "Oh, geez, the lads are on again," and they turn on the volume. Apparently they're all out in church class waiting for us or something.
Right.
So we'll go out there. We're meant to be out there in a few minutes, but listen, we're talking tea and we're having the crack.
We appreciate it. What was last night like? I'm told there were bonfires last night and it was amazing night. Can you tell us about last night?
The amount of illegal documents that got burnt was unbelievable.
Okay, there's one last thing that I really want to talk to you about. This is a remarkable story up to that point, and I think a lot of people are right behind you in the recovery that you've made. I remember watching the Monaghan game in 2015 and seeing the mouthing that they were doing and thinking, this is an unbelievable display of fortitude by you, because I kind of had an idea what they were doing. I kind of knew what they were at, and it was so stupid of them to get dragged into that, and you guys win the game and crush their dreams, and actually that was their one chance of being really successful. And I remember thinking at that stage, this guy's really got his life back on track, and I really hope it works out for him. And it's exactly the same with the book, until you come to this incident with the 15-year-old. And I'm like, I can't get behind that. I can't get behind somebody who's involved in the incident and then who deals with it and the aftermath of the incident in the way that you've done. We obviously were contacted by the father and asked not to speak to you, and there's been a kind of a delay in getting you on the show, and people were wondering why have we not had you on, considering the high profile nature of the book. What's your take on that now?
Look, I have solicitors in place and different people, and as they've said to me, is they have advised me not to talk about the incident in relation to it's not fair for me to come on here and to talk about anything that's going on. out of respect to both parties. So,
we have a statement from the family.
Right.
As a family, we have been deeply impacted by Colin McCarron's actions. My daughter has been damaged and affected. We feel that he has never shown any remorse for his actions. In his autobiography and in subsequent newspaper interviews, he was afforded the opportunity to say how remorseful he was for his actions, but he failed to do so. We also want to point out that he used the Irish version of his name on Facebook in contacting our daughter, which must be assumed was to disguise his identity. Due to his well-publicised role in a pornography film, we had to have a test done for HIV and AIDS, and we had to wait a couple of weeks for results. They were the longest few weeks of our lives. In this life, we all have to be responsible and accountable for our actions, no matter what the outcome shall be. We, the family, hope that he will be held accountable for those actions. What's your response, Colin?
No response. That's all I'm going to say about that.
You've no response?
I don't know.
You said in an interview...
Look, all I'm going to say is I was fully investigated by the law of Ireland, and they found me there was no prosecution. There's a reason why there was no prosecution.
Do you know why the reason there was no prosecution?
Why is that?
Because of the honest mistake defence. Right. Now, the DPP, it's our understanding that the DPP didn't bring charges as they accepted the defence of honest mistake, but they do also accept that you had sex with this girl.
Right, okay.
That's a fact, is it?
No, it's not a fact. And I'll not be commenting on it anymore.
So you didn't have sex with this girl?
There's no comment on it.
Okay,
you know?
So well, we're in a difficult situation here, right? Because everybody wants to support the story of the man who recovers his life, who becomes a taxpayer, who becomes a citizen again, who has this incredible story and narrative. But then you called yourself a victim because
right.
you had a book launch cancelled.
Right, okay. Come here.
You don't still see yourself as a victim, do you?
No, you see, that was a headline taken up. What I said is I had family friends that were coming from different parts of the world that I've been through a hell of a lot this last 3 years, a hell of a lot. And for you or anybody, you'll never understand what I've been through. To try and take your own life, to being on the edge of taking your own life and to not, don't tell me you understand, because if you haven't ever been to there, you'll never understand. And, you know...
What does that have to do with the 15-year-old?
This is what I'm saying. I'm telling you, you're asking me what... you know what? I'm remorseful. Why? Or am I a victim? Sorry, of the like.
You said you were a victim.
I wanted to have all that time with my people that I loved, and like I to be honest, when I released the book, I didn't care about the whole publicity or going around and doing the PR. All I wanted was that night with my family and friends, and that was taken away from me.
But you can still have a night with your family and friends. You're not actually a victim, though.
That's okay.
But sorry, yeah. you feel you are still a victim.
No.
So
did I say that?
You did say it. You said that you were a victim in an interview on balls.ie. You
right,
said
okay.
that you were a victim. So you don't think you were a victim? Having that night taken away, you're taking that statement back, are you?
No, but I'm not talking about this anymore, so we can want to move on.
Well, it's difficult not to talk about it, Colin, because it's the fundamental point of the book where it's a huge incident where it goes to show that, like, the faith that we've had in you, the belief that we put in you, it's hard to get that back when you're on a website meeting a girl who it turns out is 15 and there's no sense of remorse. So you haven't expressed remorse yet to the girl.
I says on an interview that I felt very sorry for the family and the father.
But not the girl.
And not the girl.
But you feel sorry for the girl.
But look, I'm not talking about this anymore.
To succeed a test, to play year in, year out, you have to be extremely selfish. Mm. That's the bottom line. So you got to make sure you're performing. And then B, you earn the right to talk. And then hopefully your team is performing. But like, if your house is in order, you'd want to keep quiet, you know. And that was really, I think, the way that the past generation passed it on. You earn the right to talk. So at first you kind of performance, and then other people were never spoken. When they did speak, it was like, Jesus, that's so good. Give us more of that, you know?
Right. There was a proper dislike between the two teams at provincial level, which ultimately, in retrospect, I think really is important because it drives the team to reach greater heights. Like, no one ever wants to take a backward step.
It's 100% right. You need that. It has to be like that.
It's a bit friendly now, right?
No, I wouldn't think so, because it seems I think fringe players can move, but I don't think any hardcore players can move between the provinces, because it's just not right, you know what I mean? The fellas are from Cork or Limerick or Tipperary, and there are fellas from Sandy Mount and... Well, I keep going.
Where are you staying tonight?
And Dorky and Killiney and...
As a loft to Paul Lennon, a goal! Robbie Brady! And Ireland Lee, let's go over to Nathan Murphy.
Oh, Robbie Brady, you hero! We thought we'd missed our chance. We're heading to the last 16. France, bring it on Sunday. What a cross from the right-hand side. West. And Robbie Brady gets between the defence and heads it past Sirigu. What a moment. What a goal. We're heading to the knockout stages. And don't Ireland deserve it? They've been brilliant tonight. They have killed this really poor Italian side. They've been all over them. We thought our chance was gone. Wes Hoolan, he didn't deserve to be the villain of this tournament. And Robbie Brady has got Wes. He's got Ireland. He's got all of us out of jail. We are surely going through to the last 16.
What a beautiful ball that was in. Ireland are 1-0 up, and it is all from that fantastic delivery and straight onto the noggin of Robbie Brady past Sirigu. It's Italy 0, Ireland 1. There's 5 minutes to play in Lille, and as things stand, the Republic of Ireland are heading for the last 16 of Euro 2016, Stewie.
Michele Ferrari, let's talk a bit about that, because you put him in the Alec Gibney movie, and I was astonished by that, because at that stage Michele Ferrari is one of the world's most recognised doping doctors. He's had a conviction, granted it's been overturned, but the world and his wife knows that Ferrari is dodgy, and you let Alex Gibney go and interview him and see all the stuff that's there and, you know, show some of the science that you guys are working on. What was your motivation in sharing Ferrari with Gibney?
Alex Gibney was in charge of that project. So that was not, if Alex wanted to talk to Ferrari, then that was done on his own. You'd have to ask Alex about that.
But you didn't nix it, though. You didn't say, no, hang on a second, you can't do that.
No, I mean, you'd have to ask. Alex is I think, more independent than that, and I don't think that he would have. I don't think that's the way he operates.
Ferrari, though, obviously, you know, you paid $1 million to Ferrari over the years. You could have said, listen, please don't talk to this guy.
I guess I could have.
So why didn't you?
Why didn't I say what?
Don't speak to Gibney. Don't do anything here, Michele. This is a house of cards. It's going to come tumbling down, and it's going to bring you and me and everybody we know down with it.
I don't know. I wasn't at that point. I wasn't that involved, and I wasn't that worried about. I knew that this was all going to be out, whether it's via documentaries or books or cases with testimony, depositions, etc.
Okay. Did Michele Ferrari ever offer to supply you with a motor for your bike?
Absolutely not.
And did you ever consider using a motor for your bike?
Of course not.
Well, this is interesting, right? Because it's degrees of, like, what's the difference between using the best EPO and using a motor? I'm kind of interested, because we're hearing that the motors and mechanical doping is something that there's a big story brewing, something's going to break. And, you know, it would be very interesting to hear, like, you guys were the best and you were determined to win from 99 onwards. And it's around this time we think that the Hungarian inventor starts to offer people stuff. And if I was in possession of a motor, the first person I would go to would be you and say, here, listen, what do you think?
Okay, and your point?
Did you ever use a motor?
Absolutely, I just told you, absolutely not.
And there's as a matter of interest, why? Like, what's the difference between doing that and taking EPO?
Gare, what are you? Are you a complete rookie? What are you? I mean, In 1999, nobody even knew you could put motors were for motorcycles. What do you? I mean, are you out of your mind?
No, look.
Seriously. I mean, first of all, I know that that's topical. I know that there has been a rider caught with a motorcycle or with a motor in their bike. But what? I mean, are you crazy?
No, I'm just talking to people who are saying that there's a big story about motors coming, and I'm interested to get your perspective on it and see if anybody ever offered you one. But obviously,
right, and I answered that, and the answer is no.
Okay. You said that nobody ever offered you one.
Bet all your money on it. He's getting done. All of you,
Fiddlesticks was the word we were beeping there.
Mm. No, it's worse than that, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, you use the word retard, and
he turned to the crowd and called them retards.
Yeah, he called them all retards. And the thing is, it's of equivalent to now and just in my world, you know, I have a daughter with Down syndrome. I've worked very closely with the Down Syndrome Association over in the UK, Down Syndrome Ireland here, the Down Syndrome Centre over here in Dublin as well. And these are the sort of terms that certainly you feel as on now in this day and age with how we've gone on racism, how we've gone on sexism and all various things. Mm. These are the sort of terms, this is the sort of language that is disgraceful. It is. And I understand gamesmanship, I understand all this that goes up, the hype around fights and giving each other all the abuse and all. We've seen it all now, and yeah, it does seem genuine animosity between these two, fair enough. But for David Hay to use that word retard, not just once, Joe, because he's used it before, it's premeditated, so he knows exactly what he's saying. No one's actually corrected him to tell him the severity of using that word. Mm. You just think, look, come on, mate, you're actually representing the sport here, you're representing yourself. And if for a man to stand up in front of so many people and use that term, use that word, it's disgraceful, Joe. I mean, I've heard recently, you know, in the last couple of years as well, I've stood out that the word mong I heard used as well. These sort of terms are the equivalent of racism and sexism, and I don't care what anybody says, it's exactly the same. And these sort of terms should be wiped out now. They're totally unacceptable. Yeah. And for David Hay to use that word, it's outrageous, yeah. I was disgusted when I heard it today, actually.
Yeah, you were
disgusted.
Very angry when you came in.
Yeah, disgusted with him.
I'm not a good guy to start talking science, but because I don't understand it.
I was curious why there are people raising questions about Froome's performance that you didn't go and try and speak to somebody who did understand the science more. Speak to a Ross Tucker, these kind of people who are asking questions. Like, you know, like put the burden of proof on the athlete.
I spoke to tons of people, you know. They say, you know, Froome was faster on Vaughan 2 than Armstrong was. And I say, what was the wind like that day? I don't know. I mean,
But in 2013, when Froome went up stage 8 of the Bonascura AX3 De Man, he did it in 23 minutes, 14 seconds into a headwind. And that beat Lance's time of 03 and 05. It didn't beat his time of 01, but he did that into a headwind. Like, I don't know if that's judge and jury, he's done. But there should be huge questions, though.
And in 2003 and 2005, how many climbs had Lance gone over before that climb?
I appreciate that point. But given the trajectory of Froome's career, that he was capable of this, David, I just don't know I don't know how anyone listening could sign off on Froome.
Yeah, well, you know, I could have sat on the fence, you know, and then I would never have been wrong.
There's nothing wrong with saying I'm not sure.
Yeah, but if I believed in the guy, I'd be telling a lie.
But that's my point. I don't know how you can believe in him fully in light of those performances and his trajectory.
So Neymar is the last man on the pitch. He's on the halfway line, clipping a ball into the box, and everybody else is in the box. And again, it's
here
headed away
Neymar
with the first
and he can
man.
Just have a shot. Go on.
Back stick. Stand it up. Oh, he's beating a man. He's going to shoot.
Don't shoot.
Oh. Oh, he dinked it. Oh! Oh!
It's a goal! It's a goal!
6-1.
What a ball!
Oh,
50 seconds left.
That is amazing.
He said, don't shoot, and he does it, and they've gone completely crazy.
Oh, what a
Newcastle
ball.
Fire. It's 6-1.
Oh, man, that's unbelievable.
Listen,
that is
Rica,
just
you can come and join us here. Listen, Rica, you're
Luis
part
Enrique,
of this.
You're not leaving Barcelona. You stay at the football club.
That is absolutely crazy. Was it 87 minutes and it was 3-1?
Oh, that is unbelievable.
Oh, my God, Neymar, that was just so good.